This is your 101.7 The Truth News Update.
Hello, everyone. This is Rhea Riley with your news update.
Two 12-year-olds are in custody after threatening a school shooting in Racine. The students, one boy and one girl, now face charges of making terroristic threats and disorderly conduct. Police were notified this morning of threats made by students to shoot up Racine Christian School, leading to classes being canceled. While initial investigation suggests the students didn't have immediate access to firearms, police did locate a map of the school. The two are now being held in juvenile detention, with those charges pending approval by the Racine County District Attorney's Office. A trial date is set for the man accused of killing Milwaukee police officer Kendall Corder. Jermaine Jones will stand trial on March 30th. The 22-year-old faces three felonies, including first-degree intentional homicide, attempted first-degree intentional homicide, and first-degree recklessly endangering safety. Jones allegedly shot and killed officer Kendall Corder and wounded his partner, officer Christopher McCray, in an ambush back in June. Jones could face life in prison if convicted. The Internal Revenue Service is providing tax relief for people impacted by last month's flooding in southeast Wisconsin. Those who live or have a business in Milwaukee, Waukesha, or Washington counties qualify for tax relief. This comes after a disaster declaration was issued by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The IRS says those affected will have until February 2nd to file returns and pay any taxes they were originally due during this period.
This has been your news update. Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris is next on the new 101.7 The Truth.
Bringing you his authentic perspectives on important topics.
They live in suburbs together. They live in the city together. They hang out together, all in the same family. We're the only idiots that fight because we want our voice to only be on one side. Like, does that even make any sense? And when the side loses, you lose everything. They, on the other hand, have a voice no matter what, because somebody that looks like them is always in control.
Frank, candid, and straight to the point.
Well, it's just a skewed system.
Of course it is.
It's a lot of adjustment.
But answer my question, though. Should we let people go? Should we let people go? Like, let's just forget about bail altogether. And if your neighbor commits a homicide and kills people, if you kill people and they next to you and you just let them come back and live right next to you, they can live upstairs from you. Let them come in your house.
Frank, candid and straight to the point. This is the best radio show in the state of Wisconsin. Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris on 101.7 The Truth and The Truth app.
Now, he's the mayor of the city of Milwaukee. He's a young man. Give him a chance. I only complain about things that I care about. What I want you to do is pretend like I'm in St. Louis. And all I'm asking the mayor and the Common Council president and the Common Council, show me.
Now, live from the American Family Insurance Studio at The Avenue in the heart of downtown Milwaukee, here is Dr. Ken Harris.
You're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Harris. 833-212-1017 is the number. I'm sitting here trying to type my name, and my issue is if I have too much time, I get distracted, and then you start doing stuff. So there's this conversation going on in the other. They are in a, like, I'm trying to get my show produced, and they're too busy talking about women and relationships, and they don't even know that I'm not talking. I'm going to just sit here. I'm going to be quiet and see what they say. They finally noticed. They were so into this conversation that I just stopped talking and nobody, they just going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. I'm like, I need some music I can play. I wish I had a microphone in there. But if y'all was talking about the same thing y'all was talking about, all of y'all full of nonsense. Nonsense. You know, I don't like, but, oh, you want to fight? You don't like, you know, you don't like buzzers. Not, you, Oh, it's like that? Okay. All right. All right. If Glenn is not here tomorrow, I made him disappear. I'm just letting you know now. Just letting you know now. LinkedIn, X, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and 101.7 The Truth FM. Everybody know, if Glenn ain't here tomorrow, it was me. If Glenn is not here tomorrow, it was me. I take full responsibility. I said, let me quit, because if Glenn ain't here tomorrow, they're going to be like, Dr. Ken, can you come in the office? I'm like, what I do? Glenn's not here. It's not my problem. We have tape in 25 different places that said, you threaten him. And then I'll have to, wow. So can I get a day off by canceling myself? I wonder, can you do that? 833-212-1017 is the number. Today is Black Book Thursday. And I am excited beyond compare, because I'm going to be talking about one of my absolutely most favorite topics, and that is M-O-N-E-Y. And I know we're going to get all the haters and all the people who are going to be out, money isn't everything, and blah, 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 blah. But we're not going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about The Whiteness of Wealth, a book by Dorothy A. Brown. And I think what you'll be amazed about are the subtleties that occur in America that most people don't know about. And I didn't send you my rundown, did I? He's not listening because he's too busy having a conversation with me. I'll just wait. Oh, he's back. I didn't send you my rundown, did I?
No, you did not.
Okay. So let me do that, because, I mean, I worked a long two and a half hours this morning, ripping and running and doing stuff, and I looked up, and, you know, back in the, it's like every time the seasons change, the car goes. Every time, there's always at least one thing. By the way, you have this and such on your car, and you have to fix it. And I'm like, okay. So I have to leave here and run to the car shop to get one thing fixed, and then I'm done. Makes no sense, but anyway. Before we get started, I want to take a look at and give an overview of black money. And so we understand about black money. And this book we're going to be talking about today, the Whiteness of Wealth, I've been talking about it for like 2 weeks. And I want people to understand that The Whiteness of Wealth is a book that makes really good comparisons between black and white wealth from a policy standpoint. The numbers we understand, the numbers we know about, but it comes down to policy. And if we don't understand the policies, we'll never be well off. And when people say money isn't everything, it is. And personally, I don't understand why people say that. But we need to understand that money literally makes the world go round. It makes your life simple. You live longer with money. You have better health care with money. All those things play a part in how you live your life. And so trying to get people to understand that, trying to get people to know that in the end, how you live, work, where you work, is a byproduct of income. And so the sooner we understand that, the sooner we can come to grips with what we can do in our lives, what we can do in our children's lives, what we can do to make life better. But for some reason, people eschew making money. So here in the opening, what we're going to do is take a look at what exactly money can do for people. We're going to take a look at what money can do to help us become greater, to do greater things, to have more. For some reason, people don't seem to understand that we have money and it allows us to do all sorts of things like go to college and all that. It allows us to buy a house, buy a car. And when we're unable to do that, our quality of life goes down considerably. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to really take a look at how money is going to impact our lives, how money is going to give us what we need in order to survive. But when you talk about black and white wealth, that's something that we're never going to overcome. That's something that we're never going to be able to understand because it comes down to policy, period. So make sure you hang around. Book by Dorothy A. Brown, The Whiteness of Wealth, up next.
And that is Dr. Ken's Truth on the new 101.7 The Truth. You are listening to Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris on 101.7 The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Listening to Truth in the Afternoon. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Harris. 833-212-1017 is the number. The whiteness of wealth. The whiteness of wealth. The whiteness of wealth. Before we get started, SE, good morning. Josh, Kwanda, what's up? Who else is in here? Curly Q, what's going on? Is it Babar or Babar? I don't really know. Matthew, everybody's up in here. All right, y'all acting crazy today. So, money. Let's talk about money. So, in The Whiteness of Wealth, chapter one is titled Married While Black. So, we're familiar with Driving While Black, right? Well, Married While Black talks about the policies in the U.S. tax code and the tax system that was talked about being race neutral, but it only took into account the characteristics, the culture, the customs of white America, which then disadvantages black Americans. And people say, well, how can it disadvantage black people? Well, some people it does. Dorothy Brown zeroes in on the marriage bonus and the marriage penalty that's built into law. So for many white couples, a marriage bonus arises because one spouse earns significantly more than the other, allowing joint filing to reduce their overall tax burden. Black people, however, are much more likely to have both spouses working, earning similar incomes, and this produces a marriage penalty, meaning that they pay higher taxes simply because of how the income is split across the two earners. And so she talks about the structural inequality in the tax system through her own experience in doing her parents' taxes, and found out that because they were black and they were making close to the same thing. And I gave the example here of how two people can make $50,000 and pay more tax than one person making $100,000 and their spouse doesn't work. It's not about individual choice. You shouldn't have to pay more tax because you both make the same amount of money or close to the same amount. The total should be the total, but that's not how the system works. So black women have historically worked outside the home at higher rates than white women. Why is that? We don't know. It reflects economic necessity. That's what economists are saying. But remember, everybody says what they want to say because it's in their purview, right? If I look at things from a law enforcement or a higher education point of view, well, she looks at things from an economic point of view because she's a tax attorney. If you're an economist, then you look at things through an economic thing. That is why the choice that she made was that it was of economic necessity and limited access to single-income households. But what do you mean limited access to single-income households? Well, do you know a family of four that can live off $50,000 a year? Because paying rent today, I don't know this. Not mortgage, just rent. I don't see that. So the central argument is that what appears neutral or for everybody has racially desperate outcomes because of the way race shapes family income patterns. And so if you're white, and you make money in a certain way where the parent, well, one parent stays home and the other one works, then you end up with more money. And because that is an income pattern for white families, they prosper. Black ones do not. It contributes to the widening wealth gap, which I don't compare myself to white people, so I don't really care what the wealth gap is. We need to really just go back and fix the small issue we have today. If we would just go back to elementary school and start teaching kids what they need to know in order to be successful financially, then all of that stuff wouldn't matter anyway. But these issues, the tax code, makes it harder for black families to build intergenerational wealth. I can never say that word. And when we say intergenerational wealth only becomes intergenerational wealth in a legacy when it reaches three generations. If it doesn't reach three generations, if somebody's not living off money that great-great-grandma or grandpa made, it's not a legacy. And we need to be cognizant of that so that we can work towards it. U.S. tax policy consistently favors white wealth accumulation and penalizes black economic life. So if you don't have certain accoutrements, if you don't have a small business, if you don't have life insurance, if you don't have a trust, if you don't have a will, if you don't have certain things in life, which, understand, are easy to get, and they're not for rich people. See, the mindset is that when I get money, I'm going to. And I'm like, no, you need to start thinking about it now so you already know what to do when you get the money. 833-212-1017 if you have a question about anything that we're talking about today. Tax policy is clear if you meet the criteria. Somebody put in the talking text that they maxed out their 403B. Or they maxed out their Roth 401K. But most people don't know what that means. And Roth and 401Ks were created so financial companies can take money called a 12B1 fee, and get paid for investing your money. How the market does? It just does. And most 401Ks at companies can't
advise you. So odds are you went, you make somewhere between, I forget the number, 8 and 13% more if you have a investment advisor advising you, even if you have a 401k through your company. They can advise you. Curly Q said, no, good morning, Dr. Ken. Do not make my day longer. I'm just thinking about tomorrow. Matthew said, as a non-married male, sick of you married folks not paying your fair share. Okay, first of all, you don't understand how the tax works. There is absolutely no such thing as a fair share when it comes to tax. You pay based on what you make. It's progressive. It's progressive. So even if it's progressive, and it is, people that make more money pay more money than you. Now, as a non-married male, what things don't you have, like advisor or whatever, that's not helping you save money in taxes and make more in investing? That's on you. You can't blame a system or people for literally using the same system you have access to do what they do, and you do what you do. But see, that's the mentality we have, right? Rather than work, we just want everybody else to put in, so we don't. Somebody said, Matthew said, outlaw abortion, then punish you for having all those kids. I don't understand what that means. Ken said, good afternoon, Dr. Ken. Well, the National Guard are boots on the ground in Memphis. Roadblocks all over the city. So many Texas State Troopers are, feels like Iraq. Sorry to hear that. But think about it. The more kids you have, the less you pay. Like there are so many laws and policies in taxes that actually all you really need to do is sit down and get with somebody who's an advisor or just read a book yourself to at least get an understanding of what's going on. But we need to understand tax law, the system, penalizes black economic life because we don't position ourselves to put ourselves in a place where we can take advantage of those laws. It's right there. The Internal Revenue Service knows it. They use it. It's right there. If we don't take advantage of it, that's on us. That's on us. They had a perception of what they thought America should be. They had a perception of what they thought the family should be. They had a perception about who would work and who wouldn't. And they created a system called the tax code that allowed their way of life to work. When black people live that way of life, it works for them too. But in recent decades, we've eschewed those things that we consider white. And now we have to pay for it. And the only way we can pay for it is to pay taxes.
Don't touch that dial. More of Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris is next on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Oh, that's right. She wasn't singing to me. 833-212-1017 is the number. You're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Harris, on this merry day of Thursday, September 18th, 32 minutes after the hour. And it's Black Book Thursday. We're talking about Dorothy A. Brown, The Whiteness of Wealth. We're talking about Chapter 2 now, Black House, White Market. All right, so Dorothy Brown explores the tax law, federal tax law, as it interacts with housing policy and basically how to get a house, how to overcome the issues and maintain your house, right? Housing policy has been weird in America. There's a tax exclusion for the sale of a primary residence. Did you know that? So while you're putting your money in your 403B or your 401K, you need to own a house. You need to own a house that's cheap enough for you to afford and in 15 years have it paid off. Because in 15, no, I'm not giving advice. I can just say what I did. And in 15 years, pay it off, and your house should have appreciated enough where you should be able to do a lot with that money. Take it and invest it. Take some of it and buy another house. Like there are multiple things. Because if you think about the 15-year ranges you have in your life, up to age 15 or even 20, 21, you have about 4 15-year ranges, at least 3, where you could buy at least 3 houses and in 15 years sell it and pocket the money, and there's a tax exclusion. No, I'm not giving tax advice. I'm not giving advice about anything. I'm just saying what I've done. First house I bought was $54,500. The interest rate at the time was like 6%. I sold it 11 years later for $162,500. So you can make over, you could double your money. Double your money. The beauty of it, it was tax-free. It allows homeowners to avoid paying taxes on hundreds of thousands of dollars in profit. While this benefit appears neutral, it disproportionately affects white homeowners, disadvantages black people because we don't own houses. And that is why we have partners like Axe Housing. We have partners like Associated Bank. We have partners like American Family Insurance that can help you with your homeownership, knowing that when you pass away, I hate the word transition. That's just a weird word. That when you pass away, when you die, and that house is left to your children, and they sell it, right? But there's an exclusion there too. You have to make sure exclusion. There's a rule there. There's a policy there too. You have to own the house for so long after you inherit it. You got to own the house for so, like, there's so many different things you have to look at. But the bottom line is, homeownership is the, I would say, number two way for you to build generational wealth. The number one way is to simply invest. Dorothy A. Brown explains that white families are far more likely to live in a predominantly white neighborhood where values appreciate significantly over time. Black families are more likely to purchase homes in majority black neighborhoods where redlining, predatory lending, and ongoing appraisal bias, which is a whole other show we should probably do, suppresses home values. So when you live in a place, and over time, the only way that you can make money in your house is to pay off your house, that's a problem. I live in one of those areas. I live in Sherman Park. My home has not appreciated to the point, well, I guess I should probably sell it before I say that. But on paper, it really hasn't appreciated because for some reason, the city of Milwaukee has always, I believe, this is my point of view, been racist as it relates to predominantly black neighborhoods. I couldn't understand how I moved here and went to the south side of Milwaukee and watched people buy a house, a $300,000 house in the 90s, which is upwards of $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 now. And it appreciated so fast that they were able to sell it and make money off the sale. They literally went from house to house to house to house, lived in it, built it up, fixed it up, sold it. I don't mean flipping it because flipping is illegal. But think about that. As a result, black homeowners sell. They often see less or little or no gain and sometimes even a loss, which means tax exclusion offers them little benefit. Meanwhile, white families selling in appreciating markets reap large untaxed profits, which then makes the gap bigger. So if you're living in Sussex or Conemaugh, or in some cases, Wauwatosa, Glendale, you could buy a little small house and sell it and make a lot of money. But like I said earlier, what about the generational impact? What about the intergenerational impact? White parents who sell homes with large gains can then pass that wealth down to their children. Black parents can't. Even when black families stretch financially to move to better neighborhoods, they encounter hostility, no community support, inflated costs. Because now if you want to buy a house, the house is worth $350,000. But if the white person wants to buy the house is $275,000. And sometimes we think there's a benefit to integration, and it's really not. I'm sending my child to a better school. Well, emotionally, your child may not be able to handle that. Brown underscores the housing market intertwined with tax policy systematically rewards white wealth building by virtue of the structure and penalizes black home ownership by virtue of the location. Those are my words. What looks like a universal tax break actually compounds historic discrimination, creating a cycle where white families continue to accumulate wealth and get bigger and bigger and bigger through housing, where black people just try to make a couple $1,000s on their home sale after they've owned it for 20 years because the neighborhood goes down. And so one of the things we talk about is when your taxes go up, your home should appreciate. But we know that's not so, because no matter what, it may appreciate, but who's going to pay that for it? Do you have the creature comforts of a type of community that middle-class black people are looking for, where they would buy your house? You have to remember throughout the entire afternoon and evening, seemingly neutral tax laws are racialized. They're based on a type of family structure, neighborhood, and it perpetuates economic inequality. And when I say inequality, I mean the law is not applied equally in all cases. So what we need to teach in the black community is, how do you position yourself as a 20, 30 something to be able to, by the time you're 50, have enough financial resources to travel the world, to live where you want to live, to grow old and retire, and not have it be a financial burden? One day we'll talk about the intergenerational, three generations living in one home, and how that can stifle your income. Because we are a familial culture, and we tend to take care of family on both ends. So there's some homes that have great-grandmother, grandmother, or grandfather, great-grandfather, father, and sons and daughters in the house. Four generations, one house. And because we're familial, the extra money we do make, we have to spend it to take care of grandma or grandpa. And while some of us are blessed to be able to do it and not see a financial burden, some of us are not. Next, I'm going to get into an area that I know well, higher education. And I've always pushed and talked about higher education being the great equalizer. Well, Dorothy A. Brown, in her book, The Whiteness of Wealth, calls it, in chapter 3, the great unequalizer.
Don't touch that dial.
More of Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris is next on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
You're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Harris. Truth is proud to be the home of Marquette University High School Championship football. And we have a great matchup for you this Friday night. The Marquette High Hilltoppers go on the road to take on conference rival, the Oconomowoc Raccoons. Kickoff is at 7. Friday night football on the Truth is presented by a group of law offices. One call, that's all. Should I call out somebody on the radio about this? Or just let it go. We have a great matchup for you Friday night at Marquette High. Hilltoppers go on the road to talk on conference. Oh, yeah. And so people laugh at me. Well, you always be pausing. I said, because I got to read. All right. Before the break, we want to jump in. The last segment we talked about home buying, how home ownership can affect intergenerational wealth, can build not only a tidy nest egg, but leave something to your children's children. I have run into too many people that complained and hollered about the fact that they didn't want to leave anything to their children. They wanted to spend it all. Bill Gates and all these other people all the people who talk about, I just read a text and it just completely wiped my brain. People who talk about they don't want to leave money to their family. That is just bizarre to me. That is a person that doesn't understand, right? But that same person will push to have their child go to school. And I, since I read this book, I've since softened. I used to always call education the great equalizer. Equalizes opportunity, reinforces all sorts of things in your life. But what it also does is reinforces racial wealth issues when combined with tax policy. So while education can improve potential for income, the benefits aren't distributed equally. Harvard the other day just said, hey, you know, because of the Trump administration, we're going to have to not have our minority push for, you know, Asians and Black people and Hispanic and Pacific Islander and Native American. We're not going to do that anymore. So we already have an LSAT and ACT that is written by people who are outside of our cultural norm. So all the things and all the examples that they use, many people, unless they've taken the test before, don't understand, don't know, and therefore can't do simple things like word problems because the concept is a little different. Now, some people say that's a cop-out, but when you recognize it, everything we do in higher education is geared to white upper middle class. So then you take advantage of housing, you take advantage of income because you pay less in taxes, you get the tax benefits that build generational wealth, and as a result, white students frequently graduate with little or no debt. Black families lacking comparable intergenerational wealth usually rely on student loans. Now, here's the misnomer about that. Here's the twisted part. If I have my numbers right, and I can be wrong, or should I say I might be wrong, There are more white people with school loans than black people. The problem is black people have more school loans than white people. Does that make sense? The amount that black people have on average is higher than what white people have. But again, I was able to learn those types of things, being put in the Boy Scouts, understanding, you know, citizenship in the community, citizenship in the nation, citizenship in the world, all these little merit badges I had to learn. And I learned about all that stuff, investing and all that. That's why my children graduated from college with 4-digit. And I mean like mid to low 4-digit school loans. But how can you make it in life if you're saddled when you start your career knowing you have $150,000 of debt, $120,000 of debt, $50,000? How do you do that? It creates a diminishing return on your degree. And so she talks about the tax code amplifies it. Deductions for college expenses, education savings loans, and tax credits benefit higher income. Because if you can't take the deduction, you can't take advantage of it. Black families tend to have lower incomes, higher debt burdens, receive minimal benefit, or none. And so we use a policy that's supposed to help us go to school when in fact it actually generates inequality. And so you can have an advanced degree in law, a doctorate, an academic doctor, or a medical doctor, or a dentist. Your ability to buy a house, invest, give wealth to your children when you pass is significantly delayed or diminished by virtue of the fact that you've got debt. I watched people get married, and it was astounding. When I worked in Chicago, I had a few of my white counterparts, and I had a few Hispanic guy married a white female. When they got married, they didn't have any debt. They literally bought a house. Well, what are you going to do? Oh, we're getting married such and such a day. Oh, okay. And at this time, I didn't know. Did you know that white people, when they get married, they give a gift and money? Like at the time, like 30, 40 years ago, I didn't know that. But those are the types of things that happen. They were able to buy a house the next week after they got married. I'm thinking I got to save up for them. Well, ultimately, Brown shows that education, rather than equalizing opportunities, becomes another mechanism where the gap persists. And so the great equalizer is in practice an unequalizer. So in some cases, telling a student to go to school, go get a four-year degree, go to college, go to a professional school, literally sets up a failure rate. And it reinforces white wealth, because now black people are financially vulnerable. See, these are some things that have to change. And we have to teach our children and figure out a mechanism for children to go to school and not have to pay through the nose. Me personally, I don't know why higher education costs so much. I don't understand. For the life of me, I don't understand why it costs so much. There's so many things that we can get rid of by virtue of the fact that if I have to have it for the student, then maybe the student doesn't belong in college. But instead of doing that, we err on the side of tuition payment. 833-212-1017 is the number. Let me jump to the YouTube chat. Matthew said, investing about 10% of what you make every month, 30, 40 years, you'll be sitting on a couple million. That's not true. You got to invest 15%. At 15%, then you don't have to think about looking at it or coming back and all that. 15%. Think 15. It is easy, Matthew, because you get it taken out before you get your check. and you put it in a place where you have to go through a series of four or five things to do to get it, and you'll leave it there. Put your money out of state. Don't get a debit card. Don't get a credit card to the account. Like, there are a lot of things you can do. And so you talk about old heads talking about home ownership and they pay $12 for a three. But that's the whole point. The whole point is the same money that you invest, the 10 or 15% into a 403B, you can invest into a house and have the same thing. Like, do you understand changing the context of where your money is doesn't change compound interest? It really doesn't. 833-212-1017 is the number. You're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. We're going to take a pause for Top 5 at 5 up next.